to the Columbia Center for Spiritual Living, a welcoming and diverse community whose vision it is to contribute to a world that works for everyone. The inspirational message you are about to hear will expand your idea of what is possible in life right now and affirm your soul's knowing in taking that right next step towards your greatest good.
Good morning, Columbia CSL, and to those popping in for the Columbia Experience, welcome. It's such an honor to be with you today as I readjust from a wonderful holiday adventure. I am feeling ready to sink into some spiritual nourishment in community this morning, and I'm grateful that you decided to do the same. Once again, welcome in all. So today we continue with our theme, Sacred Relationship, where every relationship we build with another flows from our first relational awareness of oneness with that thing we call life, that which created life out of itself as the many. As we follow the idea that science affirms that we live in a universe of divine order, expressing as the law of cause and effect, we can look inward to this sacred relationship to inform all our outward queries, questions, resistances, and unmet expectations that might arise as we are learning to express outwardly in the same loving and open way we are learning to express inwardly. Sacred relationships must be the effect of its cause, sacred relationship with the One. The nature of being itself is sacred and holy, immune to tampering. It is the one life that exists, expressing in many ways in our lives through both a time-space paradigm and multidimensionally in the eternal now. And therefore, our sacred relationship with the ultimate, supreme, infinite intelligence that lives in and as us is immune from tampering. So can we present ourselves to others, no matter their place in our lives, being that we have called them close to bear their teaching upon us, as authentically as we experience ourselves when in that sacred, pure conversation with the God of our understanding? And what might this mean? Exploring Relational Concepts is the title I chose for my message today, and it really springs from the very idea that when we focus on getting relationships right, we are affirming that there is an exchange between two or more in which we have a role. But when we focus on our intention of how we relate with others, the emphasis ceases to be on the results or outcome, but rather stays within the principle of oneness, unity, and promotes a healthy outcome of some sort, where two or more are poised in the energy of revealing wholeness rather than fragmentation or limitedness, I should say. So here are some of the relational concepts that I have discussed with myself as I am continuing to learn to lean into principle to uncover my state, my natural state of being as love. The first is this: remembering that it is never about the other, as within, so without. My own thought energy attracts itself. The second one is checking in to observe when I react or get triggered or feel disappointed or even betrayed or used. Was my communication, my action, my intention or imagining rooted in getting my needs met through another, codependence? Or was my communication, my action, intention or imagining rooted in the energy of affirming my enoughness, my wholeness, and the desire to simply share myself as that with another? Remembering to take responsibility to figure out what my needs are and meet them myself. To stay present when I'm feeling vulnerable, rather than justifying or withdrawing, arguing, defending, or shaming. And this last one, which has proven the most difficult for me over time, is loving without attachment to outcome. Now, during these last 10 days, I was in the car quite a bit, touring around, and I had the opportunity to blast some of my favorite tunes. Well, I was thinking that the lyrics of so many love songs speak to the idea of codependency rather than interdependent relationship. Now, I listened to, you know, the golden oldies, and years ago, I used to just repeat these songs over and over my head as an affirmation to my feeling hard done by somebody else. Here's one that came on several times. You might be familiar with this one. It goes like this. I can't live if living is without you. I can't give. I can't give anymore. Recognize it? So many of us come to our relationships, I think, with a distorted image of who we are, rather than identifying with our full and vital essence, which is always available, but often hidden within the core of our being. So we spend our time trying to get today what we didn't get yesterday. And then we end up determining the value of our relationships according to how well they help us compensate for our sense of loss or inadequacy. Now, one thing is for certain. If we keep trying to avoid feeling the kind of emotional exposure we felt as children or at any time, you know, hiding our tender hearts from one another, we therefore focus on getting something from others instead of giving to others. And we will surely eliminate the possibility for genuine intimacy then. Have you noticed that we can tend to measure the health of our relationships with how close we feel to other people? Yeah. And how we measure this closeness by how well our partners or our friends respond to or meet our needs. You know, this closeness, as we will soon understand, is not actually the ultimate goal of relationship. It's only a developmental stage. There are, in fact, two levels of closeness that every relationship must pass through on the way to intimacy. The first is called, as we have already noted, unhealthy dependency or codependency. And that is where we are focused on our relationship, actually to the exclusion of ourselves, meaning our own capacity, the exclusion of being aware and using our own capacity to meet our needs. Now, the second is the mature, mutually supportive level of healthy closeness, the foundation upon which true intimacy is built and maintained. And that is characterized by the mutual goal to create a context in which both individuals rely on one another for assistance in restoring each other's or discovering each other's sense of wholeness. Now, as we learn to cultivate this relational concept of interdependence, we come to the doorway of self-love, or loving ourselves for the sake of God, as God expressing itself wholly and completely as us. We are living in alignment with spiritual principles of wholeness and unity, and will create with others the outpicturing of a connection far deeper than the ones that we can create through even shared living experiences or sexual intimacy. In interdependent relating, things of the soul need the freedom, the space, the agreement with the other in order to express in a natural, spontaneous fashion. Reaching in to commune with our soul's values and visions for our own life and allowing them to be our guide readies us to take responsibility for our survival and our thriving sense of aliveness. Needing another in which to be able to live life in this way is more about creating codependency than it is about self-mastery. I'd like you to think of a relationship right now that you are sensing a divide within yourself about. Having thoughts that fall into the category of justification, defense, blame, shame, guilt. Now, you can't walk it back, but you can start fresh and create a new inner reality, a new mental and emotional equivalent for your life in relationship, first with yourself, your true beloved, and then allow that relationship that you're bringing up flow from there. Imagine this same relationship shifting so that you could express naturally and just share your ongoing new awareness, your deep desires, and celebration of your realized intentions and the demonstrations of your knowing. Oh my gosh, how much joy would you have? How many times have you felt simpatico with another through your loss, your misery, or your misfortune? Even started relationships from that place. How many times have you drawn to yourself individuals when you feel you couldn't lift yourself up? How many times have you attracted others who are needy in some manner or form in which to feel that you have value and your life means something? Now, while all of these can help us to grow, to become more aware, meet challenges with resolutions, become resourceful, and become skilled in relationship, it does nothing to truly empower us to get us closer to the beautiful, sacred relationship with our big S self, meaning the sacred and holy one expressing. And Lord knows it perpetuates dualistic thinking. You and me, us and them, we and they. So why is it that only when we're in love do we feel this simpatico connection, this thing that's bigger than both of us? What if we were to feel that way with our friends, our coworkers, with our bosses? And let's take that a step further, with our politicians, with our bankers. Okay, did I lose some of you there? I hope not. Because all of the above relational concepts, which point us to interdependence, are available to each and every one of us. But first, we must create that within ourselves. Now, choosing these types of relational concepts born within spiritual principles promote or attract back to us others who live in alignment with their soul and respect for themselves. Last Sunday, I went to CSL Kelowna, where Reverend Jeanette Vinnick gave an exceptional inspirational message. And one of the joys for me was listening to her share some of our teachings, Declaration of Principles. Now, these are the principles upon which I felt called into ministry, from which I aspire to continue to align with in greater ways, as I do relationship with myself and others. I want to share three of them with you now. And given everything I've said up to date, just take that all in as I speak these words written by our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes. We believe in the incarnation of the Spirit in us and that all people are incarnations of the one Spirit. We believe in the unity of all life and that the highest God and the innermost God is one God. We believe that God is personal to all who feel this indwelling presence. We believe in the direct revelation of truth through our intuitive and spiritual nature, and that anyone may become a revealer of truth who lives in close contact with the indwelling God. Sacred relationship with the One. So how do we create interdependent relationships that are honoring and respectful, where we feel empowered and not reject ourselves, where we walk discerningly, stating our preferences rather than building these walls. Undefended love for the one sacred relationship, which is the sacred self, which is God expressing as us. Undefended love. Well, first, you know, it helps to remember the essence of divinity is found in every single thing. Nothing but it exists. And since it causes everything to be, nothing can live by anything else. It enlivens it. It exists in each existent. So let us not attribute duality to God. Let God be solely God. And if we suppose that God emanates until a certain point, and from that point on is outside of it, we have dualized. Realize rather that God exists in each existent. Do not say, this is a stone and not God. Rather, all existence is God. And the stone is a thing pervaded by divinity. When it comes to our significant others, those closest in our circle of relationships, when we have our multiple layers of protective padding in place, it's like we're trying to hug people through layers of overcoats. Our outer layers may meet, but our longing to be deeply seen and heard and held and connected remains unfulfilled. So as we begin the journey of undefended love, we begin in awareness of how we use our emotional survival strategies, how we cover up our inadequacies, those places we feel incapable of dealing with, looking for others to compensate our weaknesses. We keep adding layers of defense. So it's only when we learn to identify and discontinue these emotional survival strategies that we will achieve the continuous experience of the fulfilling connection and intimacy we desire in life. And our attempts to control our internal experience and how we relate to others' responses to us seem so natural that we may initially have difficulty recognizing the extent to which all our interactions are orchestrated by these survival concerns. And so as we shed those mantles of protection, we slowly shift our center of gravity away from personality towards essence, duality towards oneness, codependency to interdependency. Now imagine for a moment that I'm holding something in the palm of my hand. And I ask you, what is it? Okay, first, I give you the clue that it is extremely hard. Now, you might guess it's a stone or a tiny piece of steel. Now, I'm going to give you a second clue. It's colorless. Well, now you might think ice. My third clue is that it can be very sharp. Now, you may think a piece of glass. If I said to you it was multifaceted, you might say a prism. And if my last clue to you was to tell you it was highly valued, you might put all of the qualities together and arrive at the answer, a diamond. Now, each descriptive word on its own does not define the diamond, but the composite description gives us a good sense of what it is. We rail to the unknown across the bridge of the known. God essence expresses itself through the qualities that are familiar to us. So by bringing to mind the sense of certain qualities, we can approximate what the essential self is like, right? Our essential self. But remember that the qualities that point to the essence and our essence are infinite. We must allow the energy of ourselves to move into our experience so that we will eventually bring our personal qualities of essence into being. And ultimately, the words we choose to describe the nature of our essence must themselves be given up. Let those words fall away. or they will stop the momentum they've been used to create, which is a full experience of the essential self in ourselves and in others. The outcome is indescribably intimate, moving us from codependency to interdependence. I want to close with a story, perhaps familiar to some, of a woman who has moved through all stages of dependency into interdependency, and her name is Lillian. Lillian is 30, and she has cancer. And one day a week, every Thursday, she goes for chemo. And she has 4 days of vomiting after 48 hours of chemo, and she tries to rest. She never complains. She doesn't doubt her ability to live life. And then one day the doctor gives her the prognosis of 3 weeks to live. And he says, there's no more chemo. We're cutting you off because there is no more hope. What does Lillian do? She walks on the beach. She takes her clothes off. Midwinter, she plunges into the ocean. She dances and falls and dances and falls because she's so weak. She sings children's lullabies to the passing birds. She engages strangers in conversation. She asks caring questions of the homeless. You know, one free day of her week, she used this completely. She cared more about life each week, despite her doctor's insistence that she stop hoping because there was no hope. She did not stop living. Eventually, she did not stop, or rather, she did stop going to the beach. Instead, she went back to the hospital and she comforted the women in her cancer ward who were also terminal. She lives today, 5 years later, and she believes it was her love of sacred relationship that saved her life. The healing power of liberating intimacy with life, with the life she was given to express. Lillian was open to having a direct experience of herself as life. Not and life, but as life. She remained attentive to the feelings and reactions stirring within her, rather than turning her attention towards the others to the exclusion of herself. Rather than identifying with her feelings, she let them swell and subside like waves of the ocean. She welcomed the watershed so as to internally keep the balance. She knew that being in flow didn't just mean demonstrating fluid movement, interactions with whatever came into her experience, but that it also meant demonstrating the flow of emotion within herself, letting cleansing tears flow. Now think back to that same person you brought into your awareness when I began this message. And just take a breath right where you are now. We are all somewhere on the spiritual path of awakening and learning to love the sacred, blessed self. Always initiating change as we evolve forwards and experiencing from that eventuality. Transition. Transition comes from accumulated intentional change, and it is a time of close concentration, like walking a tightrope. You know, it may even be a little obsessive, but we don't have the luxury of life on the periphery anymore. And our lives seem to depend upon this walk. And it's okay that we're a little sensitive about each step. We will calm down. We will come down. But first, we need what we need to walk this higher ground. So on we go, creating a sense of worldly relevance and practical meaning by fostering a love affair with the revelation of our own wholeness, by means of aligning with the source of infinite creative intelligence, always advocating for the fullest expression of its own nature, its goodness, by means of us. So I leave you with this last relational concept. take a breath with me and say, I accept just as I am. One more time. I accept all that I am, just as I am. And so it is. Amen.
Thank you for listening. If you have received a value, we invite you to share this podcast and check out our website, ColumbiaCSL.com, to sign up for our weekly newsletter, providing thought-provoking blogs and details on our upcoming classes and community events. And we always are pleased to hear from you. You can reach us at podcast@ColumbiaCSL.com. Thank you. Blessings on your journey.